settle down so we can start the proceedings for today. And good morning, honorable members, colleagues, stakeholders, and our visitors. I hope we had a good rest, seeing that we finished a bit later than it was planned yesterday. I really hope that we did manage to recharge our batteries for the day, another long day, interesting day of engagements that we have planned for today. But before I can hand over to Madam Chair to open up the session today, I would like us to turn our attention to the program. Because there are minor changes that we've implemented on the program. We've added a line item between 1345 to 1415. The Department of Small Business Development, Mr. Holane Tulare, Acting Chief Director. So I just wanted to make everyone aware that if you still carrying the old agenda, there's a line item that has been added. So don't be alarmed if you see any new speakers that you don't have on your agenda. Having said that, then I would like to hand over to Madam Chair to open up the session today, so then we can start with the proceedings of the day.
Thank you very much. Let me take this opportunity to welcome everybody that is in this meeting. We are very delighted today that we have the delegation from the Spanish Embassy that is led by the Consulate General of Spain, Mr. Jorge Pascual. He is accompanied by Ms. Sylvia Corona, who represents the Spanish Chamber. And then we have the chairman of the Mondragon, Mr. Oscar Goitia. And before we proceed with our program, we would want to ask Honorable Mabasa to do an official welcome to them.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. Before 1994, South Africa was one of those divided countries that had been divided over many, many years. Division just on the basis of color, division where South Africans were divided into many races, many tribes, conveniently so that they should not unite to form a united South Africa. But some of our heroes, led by Ntate Nelson Mandela, fought for the freedom of South Africans And that fight was to liberate both white and black. Blacks liberated from the yoke of oppression, but whites from a false superiority complex that was imposed over them over generations through the lessons of Dr. Verwoerd. But in 1994, one of the speeches that were made by our forefathers, the father of our freedom, Dr. Nelson Mandela, was that forgiveness is key. Even after spending 27 years in Robben Island, he still had a big heart to forgive those that jailed him over those years. And indeed, in 1994, we obtained political freedom. But that political freedom was without economic freedom. The inequalities still faced us. Poverty still faced us. So that the day before the elections and the day after elections, economically and socially, they were the same to the people of South Africa. But what we want to do here in welcoming the Council of Spain, Jordi Pascual, the Spanish Chamber Representative Silvia Corona, and our special guest, Oscar Goitia, the chairman of Grupo Mondragon. In welcoming you, we acknowledge the role that was played by the international community in contributing to the freedom of South Africans. And we also noted, as you contributed towards our liberation, that you also indicated that you shall not abandon us on the very first day of 1994 when we got political freedom, but you indicated that you will walk with us the journey to acquire economic and social freedom. So that when we look at your country, and when we note that we are the most unequal country in the world, we also note that it is through cooperatives as an element of economic spheres which can help to liberate the poor economically. It is through cooperatives that the gap between the haves and the have-nots can be narrowed. It is through cooperatives that the gap between the white people and the black people, black meaning African, Indian, and colored, can also be narrowed. We know it will not happen overnight, but we also know that if no effort is made to reverse these inequalities, they are not going to happen automatically. So that we welcome you in our country, in South Africa, and we welcome you for having at short notice availed yourself, Mr. Goitia, to come and say, you shall come and throw in your wisdom so that we can share it, so that we can then plant the fruits of economic freedom. Thank you very much, and you are welcome on behalf of the Portfolio Committee, which consists of a multi-party team led by the African National Congress. You are warmly welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Whip. On that note, I would like to start the program for today. It's a continuation of the presentation that we started yesterday from the DFI and the department. But at this point in time, I would like to call on the Department of Trade and Industry and National Empowerment Fund. I will call upon Ms. Malebo Mabike Thompson, the DDG in the DTI, and also Mrs. Pilisiwe Mthethwa, Chief Executive Officer of NEF. Yes, you can.
No, thank you, Program Director, and thank you to the Honorable Members for inviting the Department of Trade and Industry to contribute to this program on development of small enterprises. We had sent our presentation. I see. Okay. Now it's lighting. But Chair, I think before I go into the content of the presentation, just to explain to members the role of the DTI in the entirety of government and how the work of the department is structured. With regards to our goals as a department, we've got five main goals that are driving the work of the department. The first one is to facilitate transformation of the economy and to promote industrial development, investment, competitiveness, and employment creation. And we'll actually do that work through the focus that we have on the manufacturing sector. The second goal is to build a mutually beneficial regional and global relations which advance South Africa's trade, industrial policy, and economic development objectives. The third is to facilitate a broad-based economic participation through targeted interventions to achieve inclusive growth. The fourth is to create a fair regulatory environment that enables investment, trade, and enterprise development in an equitable and socially responsible manner. And then the fourth of our goals is to ensure that we promote a professional, ethical, and dynamic customer-focused work environment that ensures effective and efficient service delivery. The work of the department is structured around five themes. The first is industrial development. The second is trade, investment, and export. The third is broadening participation, regulation, and administration and coordination as the last. The work that we are going to be presenting to you today, which is now contained in the presentation before you, is the work that is done to support industrial development, to support our trade, investment, and export, and also to ensure that we are broadening participation in the economy. And we do this through a number of interventions, but specific to this gathering today, we are focusing on the incentives of the department, which are in the form of grants and tax rebates to support manufacturers and some services that are related to either export promotion and broadening participation. The first slide shows you the number of schemes that the Department of Trade and Industry has to support in particular the manufacturing sector, and then also the related sectors of the economy. In terms of that, we've got a scheme called 12I, it's a tax incentive. We've got another scheme called the Automotive Incentive Scheme, that is for the auto manufacturers. Related to that scheme is a people career scheme, which deals with a medium-sized people sharing automotive. Then we've got the Aquaculture Development and Enhancement Program, that is specifically to assist us with developing a viable aquaculture sector in the country. And then we've got the Incubation Support Program, which would be the one that I will focus on towards the latter part of my presentation, because this is where we use the strength of big companies to support small enterprises, another intervention of the department. I'll just quickly scan through the other support measures before I go back to the incubation support. We've got an incentive scheme called the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program. And then we've got another scheme called EMEA. This is for Export Marketing and Investment Assistance. And then we've got another one that assists with capital project feasibility programs. These schemes are not necessarily directed towards small enterprises, but in the schemes there is a way in which we assist small enterprises by ensuring that there is a requirement for procurement, and that where procurement is done from small enterprises, that people will get more benefit from the scheme for doing that type of work. And then on the services investment support, we've got the film and television production and the business processing services. Again, here for the film and TV production, we've got two support programs. The one is for foreign filmmakers, and then the next one is for local filmmakers. And in this instance, whether you are small or not, it is not something that we really focus on. What we focus on is that you are assisting us to nurture talent in South Africa, and that you are also assisting us to increase our export earnings. This is another focus of a scheme that is also listed there, the Business Process Services Scheme. Then for infrastructure, we've got support programs for critical infrastructure and the special economic zones. So, Chair, just maybe to give focus to the work that we do to support small enterprises, having given you the entirety of our suite of support measures. The first area that I mentioned is the incubation support program. So I'll go straight to the incubation support program, which would be on slide 4. Right at the bottom of slide 4. The purpose of this program is to assist with availing market access to small enterprises by incentivizing large enterprises to procure from those the small enterprises. Basically, what we would require here is that there would be a partnership between ourselves and a large enterprise, and through that partnership, small entrepreneurs are assured market access, they are assured a transfer of skills, and they are assured assistance with quality assurance and the likes, and they are also assured marketing opportunities from the large enterprise. And we do this in part to increase local content, which is another area of focus for the department, but we are also doing it to deliberately avail private sector support in relation to market access for small enterprises, and to assist them leapfrog in the sense that by having these relationships with big manufacturers, this assists them to seamlessly get into, in instances, global supply chains, but more particularly domestic supply chains, in a way that without the support it would not have been possible for them to enter those sometimes closed value chains. The way that we offer the support is on a 50-50 cost sharing with particularly large enterprises. And we link this to the work that we do on BEE, where we are asking large enterprises to increase their supplier development. So if you partner with the department for the services that are linked to the small and emerging enterprise, we would then, for qualifying costs, agree to a 50-50 cost-sharing agreement. And in that way, we are helping small enterprises to enter formalized supply chains. The next area of assistance in the DPI's broad scheme of support is with regards to the export marketing and investment assistance. Here, the target is for export-ready companies, and the focus is to assist them to see what other opportunities exist in their area of business outside of South Africa, where they can then export their products to. So the kind of things that we do there as support would be supporting exhibitions, for example, where people from different sectors can exhibit their products in international markets. We assist them with marketing materials, and we also assist them with research in foreign markets. The support is for export-ready manufacturers. You would see there that we don't really discriminate between whether they are small or big or medium-sized. The important thing is that they are export-ready. And in this support as well, in the way that we do it, we understand that for small enterprises in particular, it becomes very difficult to penetrate other markets on your own without any substantial support, particularly given the geographic point where South Africa is situated. So it is important that government intervenes in a meaningful way to assist enterprises to get market exposure. And the next, I think, scheme which aligns to the work on small enterprise development will be the scheme called the Critical Infrastructure Program, which would be on my last slide. In the Critical Infrastructure Program, we have now allowed a dispensation for clusters to also apply. And these clusters may be in various forms. It may be a group of companies in the same sector, large or medium-sized, or even a mix of large, medium-sized, and small. And what we do beyond just assisting them with critical infrastructure, in the cluster support, we are now going to assist, similarly to what we do with SEZ, we are going to be assisting them with building top structures that will support easier funding of business accommodation, including for small enterprises. And in doing this, we hope that it will lower the cost of doing business for small enterprises. It will locate them closer to those people that will buy from them in the form of larger enterprises. And again, the idea for us and where we find ourselves having synergies with the Department of Small Enterprises is to ensure that in the support that we provide for large manufacturers in particular, that we are deliberately opening market access for small enterprises. Market access is an important area for the department, because we understand that of the many challenges that exist to grow a business, if you are unable to get affordable funding, if you are unable to get a place where you're going to sell your products to, then it is literally impossible for you to be able to grow as a business. So the affordable funding, we used to have two schemes, and I think the Department of Small Enterprises now will talk to the two schemes. The other one was for the Black Business Supplier Development Program, and the second one was on the cooperative side, where we were supporting financially for acquisition of equipment, small enterprises to be able to equip themselves so that they can supply the market. So now what we are doing is that focus has now shifted to small enterprises in terms of the funding thereof. We are now focusing on ensuring that in the support that we offer large enterprises, that we continue to open up market access for small enterprises. I think, Chair, with that, I will close. I thought it was important to just show you a sheet of all the incentive programs that we offer and the areas where we've got a particular target to assist small enterprises and with market access in relation to our incentive schemes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mrs. Malebo Mabike Thompson. Before we can get an opportunity to ask clarification question, I would like to then head over to Mr. Sekakalane Molepo in place of Mrs. Pilisiwe Mthethwa.
Thank you, Chair, and let me really once more thank the Portfolio Committee in allowing us to come and just briefly present to you what we do in the SME and the cooperative space as an organization. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Mayor Bengu, and the members. I will briefly just take you through our presentation, which I hope will be flighted in order for members to see. I have two of my colleagues here as well, just to briefly touch on other elements of the presentation before we can take questions. I thought it is important, possibly at the back of what Ntate Mabaso was saying, to mention the MEF mandate as it was elected in 1998, that at the beginning of our democracy, Dr. Nelson Mandela, together with the government of South Africa, saw a need to establish the National Empowerment Fund because of the divide, the economic divide that was there from our, the apartheid legacy. Black people making 90% of the population yet excluded from the mainstream economy. And therefore, the National Empowerment Act was passed in 1998 for the NEF to be a driver and a thought leader in promoting and facilitating economic participation. And this would be done through provision of financial and non-financial support to black empowered businesses, as well as by promoting a culture of savings and investment among black people. Chair, I hope people do have the presentations and maybe they would be able to can follow as we speak through them in order not to waste time. The NEF is an agency of the Department of Trade and Industry, exclusively mandated as a DFI to grow broad-based black economic empowerment. And that is the mandate that has been given to us exclusively to grow black economic empowerment. And just really briefly unpacking our mandate on slide number 6 is that on the left-hand side, we provide financial and non-financial support. And this we do through the Fund Management Department, where we fund black empowered businesses. We also provide pre-investment support, mentorship support, and early stage investments through our strategic project funds. And then we also have a mandate, Chair, that I have read out, where we promote a culture of savings and investment among black people. And what we do is we go out and conduct investor education. We also do the public share offers. Many of you will remember the MT Nasonge share. And we provide enterprise development once we also become a BEE repository as well. And briefly, just a snapshot of how the National Empowerment Fund has performed from inception to date with what Honorable Chair I would call a shoestring budget, having capitalized only with 2.3 billion rands around 2003-04, and never really gone back to be funded. This is what we are proud to show you today. That to date, in excess of 6 billion rand has been approved across the country in more than 600 transactions. Approximately 4.3 billion has been dispersed to the companies that are more than 400 since inception. And we are glad to mention that we have secured unqualified external audit opinions for the past 9 years running. And to date, we have supported in excess of 80,000 jobs. We also, through our strategic project fund, supported 20 projects. These are industrial projects that are in line with the reindustrialization strategy. And this, when implemented, and I think it is important, would be worth 25 billion, and they have a potential of creating in excess of 80,000 jobs. And I think it is important as well to mention this Asonke share scheme, that transaction worth a billion rand was made available to more than 12 million MTN shares, on 12 million MTN shares to over 87,000 investors across the country. And 49% of those were women. We have reached over 20,000 people in villages and townships through 80 community seminars, specifically on how to save and invest, and teaching them about personal financial discipline and how the stock exchange and the government bonds were. We have also gone and provided business training skills to more than 2,500 potential entrepreneurs as part of our pre-investment mandate of providing non-financial support. And we have got a national footprint in the regional offices, and we are glad to mention that more than 25% of the transactions that we have approved in the past financial year, where we have done, just short of 100, this, we have received mostly from our regional offices. And I think it is important as well to mention that these businesses that are supported, owned and managed by black people are paying. And over R1 billion has been repaid back for us to recycle and make sure that we can fund other businesses. And I think briefly, just to take you through our suite of products, is that we have got what we call the Imbewu Fund, which primarily funds our SMEs. And this funds your traditional products like what we call entrepreneurship finance, procurement or contract finance, and franchise finance. And we fund from 250,000 to 10 million because our sister organization, CIFA, is able to look at thresholds that are below that. And we also have a women empowerment fund that we have established because we were realizing that in our portfolio there is a need to have women representativity, and this fund also funds from 250 to 75. We have a rural and community development fund which supports rural economic development through a suite of products to unlock value in these rural nodes and poor, you know, poverty nodes across the country, where we provide from a million to 50. And then, of course, you have got the other funds that do your typical acquisition transactions, where shares are exchanged between the non-BEE and those that obviously are in the BEE space. And I think before I give over to my colleagues, just to touch on the market failures that we try and address, is that slide number 11. Our view as an organization is that we need to align ourselves to the macroeconomic policies of government in ensuring that we address some of the key strategic imperatives that government come about. And you will see on this slide that the AF objectives will speak to the DTI objectives, because that's where we report, but more importantly talk to other government priorities, like accelerating economic growth, making sure that we deal a dent to unemployment, poverty and inequality, infrastructure development, skills and human resource development, and I think building a developmental state and improving public service. And this, we believe, as are strategies that are aligned to government, whilst we as well look at sectors that speak to your IPEP, to your National Development Plan and New Growth Path as well. And the MEF sectors, therefore, will be in line with those industrial objectives. And I would just like to hand over to my colleague and Tanda to quickly speak to the market failures. We always say our role, Honorable Chair, is not to compete with banks, but to make sure that we address market failures that black people face out there when they approach some of these institutions for funding. Over to you, Nkandla.
Thank you, Mr. Mlepo. We've managed to locate the presentation, but it's not coming up, so we'll go back to the one that we've been showing. Basically, just taking you through the details, but I'll be quick given the limits that we have in terms of time. If you go to slide number 13, just briefly, I think some of the market failures that we've experienced over the years when we fund these businesses, basically, it's limited own capital. We've also seen that I think most of our entrepreneurs are struggling basically with certain skills to run businesses. Access to capital is still a major challenge. Lack of information, which basically assists in the assessment of these proposals. As well as business plans, and when we speak about business plans, basically, it's not what is presented per se, but it's sort of what the client is selling to the potential funder, as a sound business proposal. And of course, as well as you know, the competition that they face from well-established businesses out there, either suppliers or customers who have a bargaining power, as well as a lack of access to capital. But we've come up with various solutions, basically, which I'll just briefly touch on without going into the details. I think some of the things that we've done to assist our clients, we have a pre-investment department, basically, that assists our clients as they come in order to guide them with their business plans. And also, in terms of capital, I think we've managed to position NEF to be able to provide products starting from 250,000 rand to 75 million rand. But most importantly, we don't require a contribution as a percentage of capital. We always engage our clients basically to understand what is it that they can contribute, and we also take salary sacrifice as well as what we call sweat capital, you know, as own contribution. And we also provide mentorship support for those businesses that you know, require skills. But I think it's sort of mandatory for all the businesses that we fund that they go through our mentorship support. And we also believe that NEF's cost of capital is competitive, and we also provide a concessionary facilities to allow the clients basically to operate, especially when they're starting out. Things like for instance, where we provide them with a moratorium on their loans. And then I'll go to slide number 16 just quickly, just to talk about business plan tool, which we have developed in partnership with a private company to assist basically businesses to be able to put together their business plans. And once they put those business plans, they don't have to submit their business plans to NEF. They can submit to any funder. If we move on, post-investment also is one of those interventions that we've come up with where we assist clients. And I think most important here is that our post-investment is for free, where we assist our clients once we've invested. We also try to provide a value add, basically, where we have shares in the business, where we sit in the board and we transform or we help in the transformation of those businesses to ensure that they comply with the laws of South Africa, but also with the government imperatives in terms of transformation, whether it be BE ownership or management and so on. If we go to basically, I think one of the most important tools on page 19 of our presentation, a tool that we use when we measure NEF, also to make sure that we align what NEF is doing with government initiatives around BEE as well as economic transformation. The criteria includes broad-based black economic empowerment, which includes all the elements of BEE. Black women empowerment is also critical, as you might have noticed in the presentation by Mr. Mulepo, that we've launched a Women Empowerment Fund. Job creation, you would have seen that through our NEF's efforts, based investment activities, we've created more than 80,000 jobs since inception. Also focus on growth sectors to make sure meaningful participation by black businesses in those sectors. And then in terms of geographic spread, you'll see in the next slides when I present how we've done that. And then investment return, basically, it talks more about not only, a return in terms of, your financial return, but it talks about the ability of the clients to pay back NEF. As you'd have seen, that at least R1 billion of the money invested has been recouped to date. And this is more specific, basically, in terms of what we look at when we look at individual clients, where we would look at the minimum black ownership, which has to be majority, at least black ownership. and many other things in the list that I've already mentioned in the previous slide. And then in terms of provincial dynamics, if we move to slide number 22, I think the most important thing there that we want to stress is that I think over the years we've managed to reduce the provincial representation. We're on page 22, Chair. You know, in Gauteng from 60% to about 45%. And also to stress that this hasn't really necessarily been as a result of reduction of funding in Gauteng, but I think we've managed to increase investment activity in other provinces such that it increases their representation. And also if you look at the balance scorecard of the NEF, the focus now is on what I'll call maybe rural provinces such as Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northwest, Northern Cape, and Mpumalanga, basically to increase our representation there. And the reason for such increase in representation has been through various interventions, which are listed on the next slide, slide number 23, which I won't go through because we're running out of time, but most importantly, the fact that we've had regional offices. Thank you very much, Chair. Okay.
Thank you, colleagues. My apologies for cutting you short, but it's in the interest of time, so then we can all share on the limited time that we have available for today. At this point in time, I would like to give an opportunity for about 5 to 10 minutes to ask clarity-seeking questions to both the DPI and also the NEF. If I may make a request that let's continue with the practice that we've been since the beginning of the workshop on Tuesday, to please keep it short. If you can be able to keep your question within 30 seconds, and then so that you can allow as many of us as possible to ask any clarity-seeking questions. I will allow the House to engage with the DTI and the NEF. I've got Honourable Whip. Oh, I've got Yusuf also. Honourable Chen, and then in that particular order, then I'll ask you. And then a guy from, you've got your hand up, sir. Oh, yeah, and that one, that would be, sir, would be the fourth guy.
Thank you very much, Program Director. I'm looking at slide 8. And then I think slide 8 informs other subsequent slides. But what does worry me is that when we talk of these funds, they seem to be targeting business in its broad sense, but by implication it excludes cooperatives, or it's not eloquent to say it covers cooperatives. Because you see, if we don't become specific to say small business and cooperatives, because historically cooperatives have always been sidelined, we will find that naturally cooperatives will remain on the side there. Walk. So if the department can clarify that, noting that that's where the majority of the poor people lie. Thanks.
I'm not sure if the department would like to take that one, or you would like to listen to all four questions and then give an answer after that. Okay, cool.
Thank you, Chair. My question is to the NEF. Considering that most of the poor in South Africa live in rural areas, and also considering that most of the unemployment, you know, some areas up to 50% unemployed people is in rural areas. The NEF talks about empowering people, yet they are funding agri-processing when it comes to agriculture, which is the main thing that most people with low literacy can do in rural areas is agriculture. And they are not funding primary agriculture. So I would like to ask, what is it that the NEF is doing to create rural jobs in the agri sector? And how much money did they spend in that area, if at all, in the last financial year? And then the second question is, what are the targets, or how many projects do they target to give the province? Because last year I was made to believe by someone who works at NEF KZN that their target for the whole province is only approve 9 projects for the whole of KZN. And if they got 9 projects, they would actually get a bonus. But they were only at 8 projects and were struggling to get the 9th one. So at that rate of empowerment, how are we going to get to these 11 million jobs by 2030? Thank you.
Would like to take Honorable Chan.
Thank you, Chair. First question for the DGI. In regard to the incubation support program, this committee has been questioning the continuing existence of this program within the DGI when its actual focus is on small business development. Sorry? Yes. So I'd like for the department to give its rationale for its remaining within the DGI and not being transferred to the Small Business Development Department. The second question is a more general question, which I think maybe we can continue later on today, is that the NEF states that it has created approximately 80,000 jobs, and if we add that to the number of jobs that has been created by the Small Enterprise Finance Agency and CEDA and the IDC and all the various other DFIs that we've spoken to and heard from, we're still talking about a small fraction of the total number of jobs that are required in the country in the next 15 to 20 years. And I'd just like to get some input as to how you believe those jobs can be created. What measures does the economy require for the economy in general to be able to create those jobs without necessarily the intervention of development finance organizations? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will take Honorable right to the back.
I'm Carl Lotter from the South African Small and Medium Enterprises Federation. My questions are addressed to both the NEF and the DTI. For both of them, follows on the Honorable Chance's question about penetration and representation, and a former question, to what extent are we getting down to grassroots? To what extent are we allowing more SMEs by using these tools to come about? What is our penetration? And I've read in Hansard and other places that our representatives in Parliament have asked the question continually of the DTI, how are you reaching more people? Why are you not reaching more people? And I hear people in the private sector saying, well, what are they doing? So I don't understand what penetration is as we're going forward as DFIs. Number two, particularly to IDAD, process management. Your DG was in the newspaper about your department not being able to dish out the money that people apply for, and your applications are stuck. Now, has that improved? And if it's not improved, then you might as well give back the money to Treasury. And the third thing is to the NEF particularly, and also to the DTI, but I haven't got their figures, but just working on the NEF figures here, it seems it's costing them 56,000 rand per annum to develop one job. Now, is that an inhibitor to job creation, or how are we, to follow up Honourable Chance's question, how are we to create more jobs if that's the cost? I understand Anglo is at 40, but I believe the correct level ought to be between 11 and 30,000 per annum to create one job.
Can I have some clarity on penetration, process and management, and cost to create a job?
Thank you. If you can just secure the microphone, please. Okay. I would like to hand over to the department and NEF. I'm not too sure who would like to take the first question first. And if I may also make a request that if you answer these questions, just hook straight to the point where we can give other people also an opportunity to ask follow-up questions after that. Over to the department and NEF.
Thank you, Program Director, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the questions. A couple of questions that were raised are going to fall between ourselves and actually the Department of Small Enterprises, because before April of this year, we also used to run schemes that focus specifically on small enterprises, and those schemes have subsequently been transferred to the Department of Small Enterprises. They include the Cooperative Incentive Scheme and the Black Business Supply Development Program. Honourable Mabaso did raise the issue on the support that NEF offers to cooperatives. I'm sure NEF can speak to themselves on that, but from the department side, there is a program. It's the CIS, Cooperative Incentive Scheme, which is currently being administered through the Department of Small Enterprises. And then the issue on the
can I make a correction? Yes. There is no Department of Small Enterprises in South Africa.
Small enterprises.
There is a Department for Development of Small Businesses and Cooperatives.
Thank you. I take that, and I apologize. With regards to the issue on the incubation program, the support measure is a partnership between big enterprises and the department to support small enterprises. We've already and are working with a number of big enterprises, and we will be reporting in our annual, rather quarterly report, on the strategic partnerships we have struck with these enterprises. So what this is part of the suite of support that we offer to the large enterprise. But we can't say, because now there is a new department that focuses on development of small enterprises, that what we understand as an ecosystem in the economy, which is a dependency between big and small, that we're going to just arbitrarily cut it out, and that the DTI will have nothing to say on that ecosystem and how we calibrate that ecosystem to assist with development of small enterprises. That is why, although there is a separation of mandate, we understand that in business, actually, we are dealing with an ecosystem. And the issue is about how do you calibrate that ecosystem. So, for us, it's not about holding on to the program or not holding on to the program. It is doing what we are supposed to be doing, facilitating an environment that allows more entrance into the economy. That's how we understand that incubation support program to still be critical, that as we support large, medium-sized enterprises, that we also through that support ensure that other government objectives are met, including the big objective of creating small enterprises. Then on the issues around the challenges of administration. I'm not sure which is the scheme where we are holding back money. But if you would look, for example, including on our last year's performance, you'd realize that we spend almost every single penny that was provided to us by National Treasury. So if there is a particular scheme that there is a worry about where money is sitting in the department and we have to return it to National Treasury, we would really welcome further engagement on that particular scheme. We've not had a scheme like that. We are running into a different problem, and I think this is where the DG was coming in. The number of applications that we are receiving are exceeding the amount of monies that we have. And we are not allowed by National Treasury to overcommit the state. That is where the issue of processing comes in. It's got nothing to do with the DTI sitting with money and not supporting enterprises. The status quo is to the contrary. We are wanting to support, but the rate at which the requests are coming in is not commensurate with the amount of money that we have at our disposal. So, and again, I mean, it's important that we also capture these things correctly. The DTI is not out there to dish out money. The DTI is its role, as far as incentive administration is concerned, it's about leveraging particular national priorities. And those national priorities are employment, they're about increasing our export earnings, they're about increasing investment, they're about value addition, and they're about making sure that we are diversifying the economy. So our preoccupation is with how we are doing that with the money that the state allows us through partnership with companies. So it's not about dishing out the money, it's about striking the correct partnerships to be able to get these outcomes from the money that that we get. So I'll pause here if you allow.
Before I hand over to you, Mr. Maleko, can I allow Honorable Chair to make a few notes, and then I'll come back to you now.
Thank you. I've asked to clarify something here. What is it that we are doing? So that in our responses as DFI's departments, we respond with the context of what we are trying to do here. What we are trying to do, the workshop is called Assessment of the Relevance of Financial Instruments Provided to SMMEs and cooperatives. That is what we are here to do. So in our engagement, we use this session as a mirror. DTI is standing in front of the mirror. And is getting information or a reflection of how DTI looks, how FIFA looks, how small business looks to the end user of the product. So we are looking at what is it that we have been doing in the past 20 years as development financial institutions established by the ANC government. The second issue is we are looking at what impact have we made through what we have been doing in the past 20 years. And the impact that we look at is in relation to the triple challenges that have been identified, which is poverty, unemployment, and inequalities. The third issue that we are doing here is based on what we have done and the impact that we have made. We then identify gaps that would need us to close in order for whatever we shall be doing, we then address poverty, unemployment and inequalities. The fourth question that we must come out of this room having answered is, what is it that we are going to do to close the gap that we have identified? Now, DTI must look at what DTI has done in the past 20 years and how that has impacted on poverty, unemployment and inequalities. And look at that in relation to the migration of the services, the establishment of a new department and the migration of the services that were provided by DTI when the function of developing SMMEs and cooperatives was still under DTI. And honestly come to a situation of saying, if there is now a new department that is mandated to develop SMMEs and cooperatives, what are the things that DTI should then be transferring in totality? Not pick and choose. In totality, because the mandate has shifted from DTI. The mandate of developing a small business and a cooperative has shifted from DTI by virtue of establishing a new department. But when you decide on that, you are also informed by the medium-term expenditure framework of the Minister of Finance in this country, who says, we are not to go out and borrow more money. There is enough money. But that money is not used creatively because departments are working in silos. Secondly, there is duplication of services. And the question asked in relation to the incubator is in line with that medium-term expenditure framework to say, when DTI decides to keep the incubator program, is that done in agreement with the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development? And in the eyes of the target group, the people that are supposed to be developed, if the beneficiaries of that program is small business and cooperatives, who then has to drive that program? And in working in a collaborative manner, can then go to DTI and say, we need an incubator, a small business, because the need is with small business. We need an incubator, a small business, and we are asking for your collaboration. If we want to change and do things in a better way, as opposed to how we have been doing it in the past.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Malepo, in all honesty, I've actually run out of time, particularly for this particular discussion. But to be fair, let me allow you to respond to the questions that have been asked, and let's see if we can squeeze one or two other questions, follow-up questions after that. So if you may please just straight to the point.
Thank you. I think it is important, and thank you, Honorable Chair, because really most of what we wanted to address has been addressed in that clarity of ensuring that we do not duplicate and have overlaps. And I believe therefore that if we look at what the NEF does and what CIFA does and IDC, it is to ensure that there is clarity to the end users in terms of where do I go when I'm looking for something else. When you look at our industry stories, sir, you will see some of the stories that we have written about projects funded. And I therefore find it difficult when you say we do not do primary agriculture. their primary agriculture projects done, however, in ensuring that we do not duplicate what other institutions have been established for, like Land Bank, we believe it is important for us to ensure that they play their role. However, if the portfolio committee on the small business development, you know, says to us, we believe NEF must do something else, I believe they have the ability to talk to National Treasury to make sure that we ring fence specific facilities in order for us to pursue that which they are saying we should do. When it comes to the issue of, you know, cooperatives, Honorable Member Mabasa, we do cooperatives. Hence, the establishment of the Rural and Community Development Fund. And indeed, some of the examples are showing that. And in September, when Minister Davis presents the annual report, we will be showcasing some of the businesses, and I invite the honorable members to come and see some of those businesses that we do. To an extent that we can even arrange that at the NEF for you to come and see some of the things that we are doing. Lastly, when it comes to targets, every province can do as many deals as they want to do, as they are able to do, depending on what comes through their doors. We do not have a limit, and I believe it would really be an indictment on us to say to an, you know, a rural province like KZN, Limpopo, we only want, you know, two deals. I think that is actually not true. The provincial offices must do as many transactions as they are possibly able to do within the confines of the budget that we are having as an institution, because that is determined by how much money we have to invest and how much money we continue receiving from the fiscal. And I really want to put it here that since 2005, the NEF has never received a cent from the fiscal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lepo. I would like then to give an opportunity to the House to ask any follow-up clarification questions. I only have 1 minute. Honorable Cooker? Is there any other hand before Honorable Cooker can speak? Okay, I've got two right at the back. I've got three questions at the moment, and then the fourth one. So then I'm not missing anyone else. These are the last round of questions that I'm going to take now, and allow the NEF and the DCI to respond, and then we can move over to the next presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Program Director. I'm very confused at this stage, because I just heard now that the client knows exactly what to do if he needs money. So I'd like to know, how do we secure that the clients know exactly what to do? Because the past 2 days, we heard exactly the opposite. Clients don't know what to do. They struggle to get finance. And you know, if you look at small businesses and entrepreneurs, they really don't know which door must they knock on to get help financially. And I think we must sort this out immediately. But apparently, according to the previous speaker, clients do exactly know what to do, so I would like to get his input about that. Thank you.
I think I'm going to be following the previous speaker to say, in the last 2 days we heard small business owners speaking about the fact that they can't access these funds. So when you're speaking, I'm also very confused, and my question is, from all the BFIs, what we haven't heard is from the briefing documents, the thing that was said was that your credit profiling or risk profiling follows that of the banks, and small business owners are saying, how can you use the same system? So I want to hear from the BFIs, how are you risk profiling? What is different from you? What makes you developmental? Because that's why you're in this sector. To be a developmental force. And the second thing is, from these SMEs, we heard small business was talking about the fact that it's not sector specific. We heard the lady seated in front of you was speaking about her chocolate factory that failed because the people that were handling her account did not understand her sector. So how are you addressing that that fault in the market? Thank you.
Nankosi.
Thank you. Good morning. You just touched on the question that I actually wanted to pose. But my next question is for GTI and the purpose of the cooperative incentive scheme. And are there any monitoring systems in place to ensure that it actually does exactly the aim that is aimed for? And also, how do you appoint service providers that supply to the cooperatives, that how do you appoint that? And the next question is around your service investment. You support film. I would like to know if you also assist banks and clubs and so on and so forth in terms of your international access. Film art, the art industry, if you also assist the art industry. Please listen there, if you assist film and television, I'd like to know if you also assist the art industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kosh. My colleague on my right, right at the back. On my left.
Thank you. I didn't hear the answer that was raised on the amount of money that NEF is using to produce one employee, and it seems as if it's be too expensive. 53,000.
A volume, please.
To create employment. Yeah. And the second question to the DTI is on the incubation. Given that the chairperson has outlaid what the mandate of this. And I don't think the answer before spoke on what this workshop is speaking about. If she can then with again revisit the answer and give us a proper answer on how is it that the incubation still sits with the TTI when you only incubate or you guard against the fall of a small little baby, then, and you don't, the analogy that came in before. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. I would then give an opportunity to NEF and also to the department to give responses. If I may also emphasize on my point, please be brief, straight to the point, and then we can then move over to the next topic on the program. Over to you, Mr.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. If one looks at slide number 29, Honorable Kruger, that's how we try and go annually throughout the breadth and width of this country to bring awareness about where the DFIs are. That is what we try and do. In addition to that, we have got partnership with other progressive youth in businesses where they are even suggesting that we should have a portal system. But when somebody walks through the door of a DFIA, he or she is able to be directed where else to go to rather than going through all other DFIs. And that, I believe, is an initiative that we take as NEF to make sure that we bring in the investor education about where some of these things are. When it comes to the jobs, I think it is important as well that whilst you may be getting the 56,000, you know, rents per job, remember the NEF as well also looks at what we call the strategic project funds. However, if you look primarily just at the SME, we are creating jobs at around 48,000, 45,000 a job, because it depends on where you actually fund. And we are doing a lot of filling stations there, a lot of franchises, a lot of security companies, and so on and so on. And that's where we see a lot of developmental impact. When I do manufacturing, it will be far much more than that because it's capital intensive. the issue of credit profiling. When you look at one of the market failures, then lastly, is the fact that NEF as an institution does not even ask for a percentage of owner's contribution. We believe that it is about establishing first the economic merit before you look at the collateral. To an extent that even institutions, or rather companies that would be technically insolvent, we believe that if somebody has got a credible and a profitable contract, we should help them as part of addressing the market failure in ring-fencing that contract, funding them so that they come out of that particular situation. And those are some of the interventions that we do. Hence, mentioned through Ntlantla that at times you even look at the operational involvement as part of one sweat equity in coming to a business. What we will not do is funding people who just want to build investment in a vehicle and not want to roll up their sleeves and come into those businesses. But we do not have a percentage of owner's contribution. If somebody wants 10 million, they only give us 200,000 or 100,000. We have done many, many of those transactions in the NEF. Thank you.
From the duty, okay. Yes, sir. I'll give you an opportunity then. Please speak, please.
Oh, okay. Good afternoon, honorable and everyone. On the question of the CIS with regards to supplier selection as well as the MNE, I think let me start with the supplier selection. At the moment, the incumbents select their own suppliers. They have the latitude to, when they submit the application to the small business department to submit them with their competing quotations. And then with regards to the MNE, I think from where we are coming from, we had the capacity then to be supported through a specific chief directory that was overseeing the monitoring and evaluation of all incentive programs. But then since we've moved into the new ministry, we are working on that capacity gap. And I'm sure we will be doing that as the year progress. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ntlantla, I'll give you an opportunity for a second if you may, please. Okay.
Sorry, there's one question that you didn't answer about the example of the chocolate factory. Yeah, I'll be quick. Basically, we provide mentorship where we have a panel of mentorships just to minimize the failure rate of a business issue. And that mentorship is for free. But over and above that, maybe also to add that we also find people who are blacklisted. I think that's what also separates us from banks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I think that we will need to make a follow-up on some of the resources that are given. I'm sure the presenters missed an opportunity of hearing what SMMEs and cooperative members that are here were saying. So you are coming here and standing in front of a mirror and saying, hey, I look very beautiful, because you have missed an opportunity of hearing what is being said by small businesses and cooperatives. Some of them have labeled the DFIs as roadblocks. Some have labeled DFIs as a toddler. They describe a business owner as a toddler who's staggering, a child that is starting to walk, but there's no one who is coming closer to help. And that is the lady that said that, the one in front of you, Kom. Kom was, Mtun. Mtun has a contract with Pick and Pay and with Woolworths. And with all the DFIs that have been sitting here, none funded her. None. She had to close down and go back home in Kandi. That is what we wanted you to hear, that here is a young person because we want you to see yourself from a mirror perspective so that you can then change. Then the last thing that I want to say, you can respond to it today or whenever. The question is, has there been a workshop or a strategic planning workshop that brought together all the DFIs that are providing financial and support services to small businesses and cooperatives, sitting in under one roof and say, this is what will be done by NEF, this is what will be done by CIFA, this is what will be done by NGA, this is what will be done by NYDA. Because if you have never sat under one roof as this DFI to respond to the strategic plan of the country in as far as development of SMEs and cooperatives, I can bet you are bound to make duplications and you are bound to respond to perceived needs instead of responding to felt needs. I just want to stop there.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And also, just to go back to what, when we started the session on Tuesday, on day one, what Honourable Chair highlighted was the fact that the whole point of having this session was not to pat ourselves on the back and say we're doing good. The whole point of having the session, the workshop, was that there are problem areas. Let's all acknowledge the problem areas and let's see how then do we move forward coming up with workable solutions. And also, if you look at the structure of the 3 days, we had cooperatives, we had SMEs, we've got the DFIs, we've got the departments. Meaning all those three stakeholders, they need to sit and discuss, because definitely if there were no problems, we wouldn't be sitting here. We'll only be sitting in the telecommunications accounting in terms of how did you spend the money, what progress are you making on the programs that you have. Obviously, the programs that are currently, or the schemes that are currently in place, they are not sufficient. There are gaps that have been identified. How then can we move forward, make sure that we develop this beautiful country of ours? How do we address the triple challenges that have been identified within the National Development Plan? Unemployment, poverty, inequality. That's, in a nutshell, that's why we're having this particular session. And it's very well articulated in the document that the Secretariat actually sent out to all the participants of the workshop. The appropriate outcome to facilitate a common understanding from the DFIs and their clients, meaning the SMEs and the cooperatives. Some salient features and identified gaps in the whole spectrum of SMEs and cooperatives, financial provision with an aim of soliciting a workable solution, workable and lasting solution which can benefit SMEs and cooperatives on the one hand, and on the other hand to have funding model that strike a balance between counter-cyclic policy instruments and a role of performing financial access to SMEs and cooperatives. Having said that, I would like to put this particular discussion on the parking lot. We have a slot on deliberations and we are going to our level best to extend the particular slot so that we can engage meaningfully. Let's not shy away from having robust, hard discussions. We are not here to brush each other's egos, yeah, you're doing okay, yes, yes. No, we are here to have hard discussions in order for us to move forward. Having said that, I would like then to call upon the IDC and if I may request, if it's possible, please keep within 15 minutes or less, so then I can provide
clarification questions for another 10 minutes so then we can move over, because I'm very much interested on the slots on deliberations. So, can I just get clarity on something? Sorry.
No. The question was important. You got it. It was Peter. It's one of the important things.
Of that check.
The question from PTI.
Okay. No,
problem, Director. Sorry for delaying. I know that we are rushing. I mean, we are late. We are rushing for time. But I think there's one of the questions that is important that really the committee going forward here to understand and know. I think the question with regard to the incubation support program, I think it was very crucial to hear the views from the GTI, because when Ms. Mabuti Thompson presented, he said no, they cannot abandon the program because they also are responsible for medium, for supporting medium enterprises. So the problem that we are running out is that maybe one of the same footing, quite footing, because what is our understanding that the Department of Small Business Development is tasked to develop small, medium and micro enterprises and cooperatives. So I just want to get the views from the DTI about why they're still holding as the three participants asked this very same question. It's very critical to the community because we've been wrestling to understand about this.
That question is very, very important, because if we are looking at duplication and confusing the client, if that program has to be located in the most strategic department. And if it is not moving from DTI to small business, it would mean that small business development will have to have its own incubation program, which then becomes duplication. Because incubation means we are fugamela. We fugamela in tenge gabi koni kanda. Uguze gupume itane. Now, you can't fugamela a big business. You fugamela a small business. Or a business that is not in existence at all. And if then there is a department that is charged with the responsibility of developing small businesses and cooperatives from scratch, then I will be corner. The incubation then has to come to that, because his kukuvazi is a fugamela makanda.
In English, you can translate isiZulu. It's simple and straightforward. That's what it says. We are fugamela.
It's a hell hatching.
We're hatching. Really, something that's not there. You're not even sure what's going to come out. You're hoping it's going to be it's like plowing poor potatoes. You say that something is going to come out to potato or inkuku. Thank you. Any F? Oh no, sorry. PTI.
No, thanks. I think the when there were separation of roles, there were discussions between the two departments, and maybe it's a discussion that the two departments must have, because there's two levels of incubation. There's an incubation when you've got an enterprise that is at a stage where it can supply, but with certain levels of support, it can then be embedded into either a global supply chain, depending on what they're doing, or domestic supply chains. Now, at that point, it's not somebody thinking about an idea. There we are talking about scaling up what that enterprise is doing. And the lever of breeding that the chairperson is talking about, that sitting on the egg, is actually sitting with the person who has market access, the person who can offer that company market access, they can ensure that they conform to particular standards that they need the company to conform to in order to supply to them. That lever is not sitting in another small enterprise. Because of the way the South African economy is structured, generally that lever is sitting with a big enterprise. Because of the levels of concentration. So I'm not saying, and I don't even think it's for me as a DDG to say to the honourable members.
Let us close this debate. We will take it further. Let us close it, because if Mondragon, being a giant in hatching cooperatives, this is the hen, the Mondragon, is hatching cooperatives, it's linking with small business. That then tells Gute there would be no harm in taking that big business and plug it to the small business. The question that we are asking is, how does that happen if the small business is not sitting with DTI? The small business is sitting with small business. You are bringing in the hen to hedge in small business. Abantu kufanele mina ngibakhathe abantu who are up and running. Sizokubetha kwenye indawo le, because we want to avoid duplication and confusion today.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Would then like to hand over to IDC. Unfortunately, there is no name next to the line item. I apologize for that. Over to you.
Thank you, facilitator. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members and colleagues, for this opportunity. My name is David Jarvis. I'm an exec at IDC. First off, just to say that... sorry? I'm a divisional executive for corporate strategy. We have distributed a slightly amended presentation. My colleague Lizo Ntloko, who's our regional manager, has been with you for the last couple of days, so we've been engaging on the kind of deliberations which have been coming up within the workshop, and so we just did a few amendments so that we can contribute to the flow of the workshop. The first point, and I think it's been made, I don't want to repeat what other DFI colleagues have been mentioning, is that within South Africa you have a number of DFIs operating with core mandates which differ from each other. What's also worth mentioning, and I think it's relevant to some of the issues which have come up, is that the combined size of DFIs is around 5% of GDP. You find in other countries, for example, in South Korea, Germany, Brazil, you're looking at rates of around 20%, the contribution of DFIs to the national GDP. So not only do we have multiple organizations, we also have a smaller size in relation to our economy, and this is worth noting because compared to some of those other economies, our challenges are obviously a lot larger. Obviously, as you know, in terms of the SME space, when CETA was established in 2012, that also what IDC did was to also shift some of its small business clients to CETA, so that side of the business was shifted to CETA, but that doesn't mean that we no longer do small enterprises and co-ops. We still do that, and I'll get to that. I won't, because we've only got 15 minutes, I won't go too much into who we are. We are, in terms of our asset base, we are a large DFI. However, because of our focus on industrial development, as was mentioned earlier, this is a more capital-intensive space to play in. The investment sizes, the investments required are generally larger. So we do need that muscle from our balance sheet to have an impact in industrial development. In terms of how we wish to impact on the economy, our focus is really on what we call jobs-rich industrialization. So focus is really to move South Africa up within our mandated sectors, which is mainly within the manufacturing and tourism space, to develop the economies further and thereby create jobs. Just to, in terms of the kind of instruments that we provide, and similar to other DFIs, we also, our key focus is on our financial instruments. But we also provide non-financial support, that's business support to our clients. We do that pre- and post-investment. I think this is one of the areas where we're very different from banks. We support businesses in developing their business plans, but also that's in the pre-investment phase, but importantly in the post-investment phase, we aren't like a bank where when there's problems in the company, we just go in there and we perfect our securities. We take our securities that we have against our loan. We try and turn companies around. We have a workout and restructuring unit that is very involved in the post-investment. Yeah, I should just mention, I mean, in terms of the mirror, I think similar to other DFIs, we are constantly engaging with our stakeholders. We do surveys of stakeholders, surveys of clients, not only the ones we support, but also ones we don't support. They identify issues, and then we try and address those. Some issues are easier to address than others. I mean, some of the issues which normally come up are, as has been mentioned, complicated application processes, the turnaround time. I think these are common issues which we have, especially turnaround time on, for example, finalizing contracts, etc. So we do constantly engage with our client base and do try and respond to some of the issues which they raise. That brings me on to my next slide, which is what makes us different to the banks. Well, there's a number of differences, and I think some of these have already been discussed. So like I mentioned, from NEF side, for example, your entrepreneur's contribution, we would accept a much lower contribution. So for example, when we're supporting black industrialists, similar to NEF, we'll have we'll waive contribution, and then the entrepreneur can make up for that in their sweat equity. Also, we take a lower level of security. So what makes a bank able to have a quicker turnaround often than a DFI is that they'll just match the loan and they'll match the security they can take on that loan, so that they make sure that they're covered if things go wrong. What we do is we say, is this a viable business opportunity? Is it a viable business plan? Technically, does it work? Is there a market? Can the management deliver? And then we assess, so we'll assess on those kind of characteristics, and that's similar to the other DFIs. The downside of that is that obviously it takes more time. And I think that's sometimes where we get a lot of frustration from our customers. So we do try and reduce that time. But in terms of and we monitor it, it's even on our corporate scorecard, and it's a target which is managed, monitored quite closely by our shareholder. Then we also take into account development impact when we look at our pricing. Our minister just recently announced 150 basis points discount for black industrialists on all of our products, on our general funding. So that's for equity and for debt. What also makes us different from banks is that we will take a share in your business, so we will take equity. We'll look at your business and we'll say, is it viable? First off, I mean, can it take a loan? Does the balance sheet, does it have the financial muscle to be able to accept loans that it'll be able to pay back? If in the case where it can't, then we'll take equity in some cases. We even have, we do venture capital funding, so we start very early stage startups, which isn't what your commercial funders would be doing. They'll only get involved much later. So we do startups. We'll even initiate projects as IDC in riskier areas where we're testing new technologies, or it's very early stage in projects. We also finance feasibilities, pre-feasibilities. We even do reviews of sectors to see whether there's opportunities. I know CISO presented yesterday, so I won't cover what they've already covered. I mean, we weren't planning to, but just to say that CISO is CISO now reports to this portfolio committee, and also the needs to align to the Department of Small Business Development's strategy, but they remain a subsidiary of IDC currently. We support CISO in a number of ways, not only through financial support, which we have given in terms of shareholders' loans, but also in terms of seconding individuals to CISO. We support them in IT, internal audit, legal, etc., because we realize it's still in the development phase. It's been around for 3 years as an institution, and I think in terms of the impact they've had, it's quite large if you take into account that they were recently established. Just in terms of how we differentiate, we won't fund below 1 million. So I think this is chairperson, we were speaking to overlap. One of the ways we differentiate and do market segmentation is to say we will only do financing from 1 million rand. And up. The plan is that as CIFA increases its capacity, we will shift that up to 5 million rand. So that's always been the plan since the establishment of CIFA. So CIFA goes up to 5 million. We start at 1 million. We realize there is a bit of an overlap, but we do also collaborate on past referrals and that to each other. Chair, I've already mentioned our approach to SME development. It's not just the funding, it's the pre and post investment support. And I also won't belabor this, which is really looking at our different funding products. What I also should have mentioned earlier was that in terms of our funding arrangements, we'll often take a much longer term loan, or offer a much longer term loan than banks. Which is also something, because we look at what suits the business, and sometimes a longer term loan is what suits the business. We also offer grace periods. So in other words, especially when we're dealing with startups, we understand that the cash flows won't be there in the beginning. So we'll offer grace periods, maybe 6 months or up to a year, where the business can get established before it starts paying back its loans. Yeah, this has been distributed, so I won't go into all of our funding products. We do have specific on-balance sheet funds which target particular opportunities. I know we had a discussion just now about the cost per job. If we were sitting at 50,000 per job, we'd be very happy. But most of our investments are in capital-intensive industries where the cost per job is a lot higher. But we do offer incentives to those manufacturing companies which can create jobs at a lower rate. We also look at particular groupings of entrepreneurs such as women and youth, and offer a lower rate to them. We also have funds which are focused on, for example, energy efficiency. We also manage, these are our on-balance sheet funds, we also manage other funds on behalf of mainly the DTI, but also EDB, and these are targeted at, for example, increasing investment within the manufacturing sector to particular sectors such as agro and jewelry manufacture. As you would expect, you'll notice from our trend in funding approval since the establishment of CIFA, there is a downward trend in terms of SMMEs, but it still remains an important part of our book. If you look at the last 5 years, our number of clients, 60% of our clients have been SMEs, although the value obviously translates to a lot less, it's 14% of value. And that's obviously because of the size of the loan. You'll find that the the number in the larger companies, sometimes we're looking at very large deals, hundreds of millions of rands and above. So over the past 5 years, we've approved 8.3 billion in about 700 transactions to SMEs. Just in terms of the areas, what I mentioned earlier in terms of our development impact, the areas that we focus on include the following. We focus on, and this will all earn the enterprise a cheaper rate in their funding. For example, if they're black industrious, they have a better BE rating, youth for women empowerment. We look at whether it's in a province where there's a lot of manufacturing activity or not. We also look at the environmental impact, whether there's community empowerment, etc. So we take those factors into account when we assess applications, and we also actively support, we have particular initiatives to support these groupings. I mentioned the funds, but what we also do, for example, in the renewable energy space, we've been one of the major contributors to the funding of community empowerment within the REIT program of government. So we'll look at opportunities where, and it links to what Malebo was saying, I mean, where there's opportunities to piggyback on other programs like the REIT or the expenditure by the SOCs to make sure that these opportunities are spread to black industrialists, small enterprises, etc. Just a few case studies, and I really will just shoot through these. We do support across manufacturing. However, we also support some elements of basic of primary agriculture, especially in the forestry, and where it's new types of agricultural spaces, new crops which we're developing, such as in the berry industry, where we have supported enterprises. This is an example of Sicheza, which is a community-owned forestry company, which we supported. We've also supported, these are just examples. I mean, obviously, as you saw, we've supported 700 SMEs over the last, excuse me, Chair, over the last 5 years. But this just gives you a feel of the breadth. We supported the Soweto Hotel on Freedom Square, where we have equity in it, and it's a black shoulder of more than 50%. We supported some workers in buying out Chic Shoes, taking ownership of Chic Shoes, which is obviously it's in the clothing, textile, footwear, and leather manufacturing sector. We also do quite advanced manufacturing support, so it's not just in your traditional manufacturing areas. So, for example, one of our new industries we're focusing on is medical devices. And Synthicon Sutures is an example of such a company which is already exporting into the rest of Africa, and they've grown their business since we joined them. They've doubled their amount of employees. We've also supported, and this is one of the things around market development, on the back of Tswane's waste management services. We've supported a 100% black-owned company to look at to set up a material recycling facility, and this is a space that we are keen to be involved in. I've distributed a booklet which covers some of our social enterprise work that we do. We do have a social enterprise focus, which is we see it as part of our core work. It's not part of our CSI as such, so it is really about social enterprises entering the mainstream of the economy. I can see I'm about to be cut off. So the one is the Sekopa incubator in Soweto. Another example is GreenAble, which employs disabled people to do recycling. And another, a final example is where two young men came together, and they take shipping containers and turn them into useful spaces such as gyms. They've just signed a big contract with Virgin Active. That's fine. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, sir.
At this point in time, what I would like to do then is we, if we look at the time, yes, we are definitely behind schedule. We should have completed the next presentation from Mondragon, but what we're going to do now is give one or two rounds of questions, and then I'm going to allow, because my colleagues have just informed me that there's coffee and tea outside, just going to allow 5 minutes, not more than that, and then we can come back and listen to the Mondragon presentation. But for now, I'm going to allow clarity-seeking questions. Once more, I would like to make the request. Straight, 30 seconds. Honorable chance. Members, why? If I'm not mistaken, but I'll start. Is there any other hand that I'm missing? Oh, sir, right at the back. That's the third one. Oh, May, November. Oh, Honorable Wood. In that particular order, if I can take those 4 questions, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Jarvis. I would like to put it to you that an argument can be advanced for having one industrial development corporation and one small business and cooperatives development corporation, Finnis and Clark. Scrap all the other DFIs. Because we basically have so much duplication and so much confusion that unless you do something radical, we'll never solve this problem. And the sort of support that has been provided by the IDC, I mean, it's a venerable institution. It's been around for a long time. It has huge depth of expertise. And I believe that this should be given serious consideration, because with the presentations that we saw yesterday from Itala Bank and FOSIFA, are beginning to move into a new area where we're looking at hybrid finance where we can expand the role and the footprint of the DFIs so that we can increase the contribution, or their GDP contribution from 5% to 20%, and we can actually start to achieve something. Because I think at the moment we have so much confusion that anything which is dealing with the current lot of institutions is actually just going to be tinkering, with the pieces rather than actually having a fundamental root and branch reform. I'd like your comments on that, as well as my question that hasn't been answered so far, which goes to the issue of how do we increase employment across the country if the impact of DFIs is so minimal currently. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Nansen Ajay from the National Stock Fund Association of South Africa. I just wanted to ask, the speaker reflected that they're trying to reduce the time to respond to applicants, and I wanted to understand what time frame do you give yourself to respond? What's the limit? Because some of the SMEs that spoke about the applications going in, by the time they receive response, the funding, it didn't matter anymore. Then the second part I wanted to ask you was, from the DFIs, I'm really hearing that they're struggling to communicate with SMEs and cooperatives. They're struggling to communicate clearly. And I just wanted to, it's not an advert, but as a National Stock Fund Association of South Africa, we talk directly to stock funds. So I think that they should use even some of the other associations that are present here today to get the information to stock funds. I mean, to SMEs and to cooperatives, so that they understand how they can access these funds.
Thank you, Ms. Bazaar. Sir, right to the back, yes?
Yes, Carl. I support the comments made by the previous two speakers, and just as an editorial say, what we seem to face, and we're hearing from this, that everybody talks in macroeconomic terms and no one wants to get down to the micro of the detail. This particular IDC report, like the others, shows a drop in the ocean as far as jobs, poverty, alleviation, inequality. The drop in the ocean for the amount of assets they maintain. According to my calculations, IDC on this page of graph does about 139 transactions at a cost of 1.6 billion. On average. Now, some could be more, some could be two, I believe them. So they're not getting anywhere near entering that particular field.
So my question is, when we look at the mandate of the Department of SME, which goes directly to our national mandate of jobs, inequality, etc., what we are hearing is that the money that we as taxpayers have invested and as governments do is not delivering the jobs that we want. It is clearly so in the figures. If we were to conflate CIFA on the trend funding proposals with this graph we are given, it would make no difference in what I hear has been reported to Parliament, that the drop in their impact has continued. And I support Ms. Mzwai there and others in the private sector. You're not partnering with the private sector, government. Your president and your CEO has called on you to partner with the private sector, and you're refusing to partner with the private sector. That's why you're failing. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. Honourable Ruth.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Program Director. My question relates to the one I asked NEF to say, if we go according to the performance of the previous financial year, how much has IDC distributed to cooperatives? In other words, cooperatives versus other business. And in terms of the plans now for this current financial year, the same question is being posed, the ratio. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable. There was another hand beside. Yes. Yes, sir. One last one, then I'll allow for response.
Okay, my question is a question that's been asked earlier by Ms. Mzwai, and the gentleman they attempted to answer it, but did not really. The question was, how do the DCI and other and associated DFIs, how do they source and appoint service providers who provide support and mentorship to SMEs across the country? How and how do they do that? How do they make sure that that works, the mentorship across the country? What clarity on that? How do they appoint and who do they appoint?
Okay. Thank you, sir. I will allow for responses to the five questions that have been asked. Then we can judge if we can take another round of questions.
Thanks, Chair, Facilitator, and thanks for those. I think they're really good questions. In terms of how do we increase our contribution, so I think what we're trying to do, and I know a couple of DFIs will, probably all DFIs are trying to do this, we realize that in terms of our financial muscle, we aren't going to have the impact we would really like to have on the economy. So what we have to do is exactly as Mr. Carl mentioned, is partner with private sector where it makes sense. We also need to partner with each other where it makes sense. And we need to look for opportunities, sometimes partnering with big business or associations, etc., to really increase our impact. What we also have to do is we're sitting at... for every rand that we invest as IDC, we leverage 2 rand. We want to increase from private sector. We want to increase that to 3 rand in the coming period. So for every rand we put in, we want to leverage 3 rand. So that's just a basic measure which we've set ourselves. So we need to leverage up our contribution through our partners, as well as working with other organizations. And I'll give you an example. We're working with a large retailer that is going to bring to the party market for small enterprises, particularly focusing on black women and youth in owned enterprises. So they will get their market ready. We will provide financial support. They will be able to identify, for example, what are the kind of opportunities which in terms of what consumers require, where the gaps are within the retail space, and then mentor these businesses to provide for that market. So those are the kind of partnerships which really work. I mean, another one which we're doing, we work with the PICC to look at localization opportunities on the back of our massive infrastructure program. And there we work with the likes of Eskom and Transnet to say, well, where are those opportunities? What products can we manufacture locally within the small enterprise? So that's how we hope to leverage our impact. Honourable Chair, you know, there's advantages and disadvantages, I suppose, to having multiple DFIs in different spaces. You know, the model we've gone for is one that says for particular opportunities in the DFI space, you need to be specialized. You need to understand your target market, and you need to develop capacities to provide a specialized service to them. And I think that was the logic behind the formation of CIFA. We realized as IDC that, you know, it's unfair on smaller enterprises to have them do the same application processes as larger. They might need more support, etc. So similarly, if you're going to go into the agricultural space and small farmers, you need to understand extension services, etc. So that's the kind of that's the logic behind it. I agree, though, that obviously then we make our problem the client's problem. We expect them to know where to go to. So, for example, on our website, what we've done is if you don't qualify for a particular reason, let's say you're applying for a loan of less than $1 million, you automatically will be redirected to CIFA. But again, the idea of a one-stop shop that Sitlux was talking about is obviously the best. I mean, you shouldn't expect clients to understand that the general population to understand if they want X loan, they need to go see Y institution. In terms of our time frames, we have specific time frames for turnaround times. Currently, we set for our non-complex tasks. Obviously, if it's a very complex transaction, like we're establishing a renewable energy plant, then we use a different measure. But for our what we call our vanilla transactions, we try and turn them around within 15 days, 17 days, that's working days, 17 days is our base, 15 days is our stretch. So that's what we're really targeting. Some of the issues which crop up which affect that, often we'll need information from the client, and again, that's obviously a frustration for them. We want information from them, like a tax clearance certificate. If they take time in giving us a tax clearance certificate, then it's obviously our credit committees wouldn't approve an enterprise that's not tax compliant. So then we do have to wait for them to get like a tax clearance certificate. Let me just see. Honorable Mabasa, I don't have the... I know that we haven't set aside a particular investment target for co-ops. We do have our development impact support department, which supports co-ops in particular. I would have to come back to you on the actual figures, and I can provide those later to the committee.
Is that for previous as well?
Yes. I can do that. Then in terms of our service providers for mentorship, we have an established panel of service providers that we occasionally we go out to market and look for people who can support us, for example, with our business turnaround support, and then so it's a procurement process where you get onto our panel. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much, sir.
Sorry, I didn't think you answered. Maybe I missed it. I didn't hear the answer about the time frames, response times for applications.
Turnaround time.
Yes. So that's the turnaround time. So for the non-complex, we're targeting 15 days.
Cool. Thank you, sir. Out of respect of all the presenters that have been allocated slot to come and present today, I'm going to end this particular slot and allow us to go out and have coffee. 5 minutes. Let's stretch 5 minutes. Let's all be back here at exactly 11:45. Please, let's all be seated so we can get ready for the next presentation. Thank you very much. Are you sorted?
We have come to the point on the program as colleagues and other members that are working in, I would then introduce Mr. Oscar Goitaitia. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. Pia, the chairperson of Mondragon International, to please come to the podium, and they will give their own perspective of Mondragon model of cooperatives. Thank you, sir, and welcome. Thank you.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, dear friends, in 1943, in a small town called Mondragon, with about 30,000 inhabitants, during the recession after the Spanish War, a Catholic priest came into the town. He realized that there was a lot of young people unemployed, and he decided, from his social perspective, he should do something for these people. So he founded a small school. From this small school, after 15 years working with the students, he selected 5 of them and sent them to study engineering outside the city. And when they returned, he asked them to establish companies, to establish manufacturing companies, where the main characteristics was to be cooperatives. He asked the people working in the company to be shareholder and employed in the company. So this was the starting, the embryo of what is today Mondragon. They started manufacturing goods which were required at that time. That was cooking stoves, cooking devices. After several months developing different small companies around these products, the founder realized that the main challenge to grow was the financing. So he went to the government in Madrid, in Spain, and asked to create a bank. This bank was going to be owned by the companies and was going to use the money of the public to fund the different cooperatives. He was successful, and the next thing he was asking to the government, since the cooperative members were not covered by the social security of the Spanish government, he asked to create another association to cover the health and the social security of the employees of the cooperatives. And that was the first milestone, was he achieved successfully, and this is the result 50 years later, what I am going to show you in the next slides. Nowadays, we are the biggest business group in the Basque Country, in the north of Spain, where we are located, and we are among the top 10 of the Spanish business groups. Probably we are worldwide the benchmark in the work of cooperatives. These are the different stages as I explained you before. And the mission we have now as a business group with a social economic reality of a business nature, with our deep cultural roots in the Basque Country, created by the people and for the people. We are inspired on our cooperative experience, and how we have, as Mondragon, the committed to the community to generate new jobs through business developments and distribute that wealth in the society. And using democratic methods, one person in a cooperative has one voting right, and we encourage our members to participate in the management, be integrated in the teams, share the profits, and feel the ownership as part of the personal development in their lives. The main corporate values that we share in all the companies of the corporation, we are owners and protagonists of our companies. We are committed to participate in the management. Part of our DNA is to have in all our business plans and all our strategic actions the innovation, because we need a constant renewal of our products and services in order to be competitive to create additional jobs. And on top of that, we believe in the distribution of wealth based on solidarity and involvement on the community where we are located. The cooperative principles, the 10 ones, how we read them. Basically, Mondragon cooperative experience is open to all men and women who accept the basic principles without any type of discrimination. The basic equality of worker members, the sovereignty of the General Assembly, electing governing bodies and collaborating with management bodies. The labor is the main factor for transforming nature, society, and human beings ourselves. Capital is considered to be an instrument subordinate to labor, which is necessary for business development. Self-management, adequate mechanisms for participation in the companies, very transparent information, through the planning and through the managing of the company. In our principles, the wage solidarity, sufficient and fair pay for work as a basic principle, in accordance with the real possibilities of the cooperatives. This is very important. Intercooperation, that's probably one of the key ideas which make successful the Mondragon model. One single cooperative is a very strong model because the people inside is committed long term for the future, is committed to the company. But when you put together several cooperatives working together and sharing all the best and the synergies, that's the moment where you get the real transformation effect. Of course, we are not working as a Mondragon Corporation only inside Mondragon. We cooperate with the rest of different associations, groups of people who believe in the same principles as we do, and we are actively working in the international cooperative movement. One of the basics, and back to the roots, as I mentioned before, education, cooperative education and young generations education, that is the basics to develop any potential future development. As a result of the mission, together with the principles that we put in our daily thinking and daily analysis, we end up having a quite big conglomerate of companies, which I will break down later on. Basically, Mondragon is divided into four main areas. You see at the left side, you see the financing area, where we have our bank and social insurances. In the other side, you see the retail area, which is all the supermarkets and consumer activities. And in the middle, you see the industrial area, in which we have several divisions working in very diversified sectors, starting from automotive components up to elevators, engineering, services, equipment, machinery, construction components. All this is based in the knowledge area, which is a conglomerate of research centers and the university. The origin of this university is the small school, which was created by the founder, and nowadays teaches to 7,000 students in four different areas: engineering, humanities, financing, and the last one, which is the Basque Culinary Center, is helping young guys to create restaurants and to know, understand how to manage those kind of businesses. The main figures, as you can see, in 2004 we end up with 74,000 people working in Mondragon. 50% of this group is working in the retail sector and another 50% more or less in the industrial area. The business figures, aggregated business figures, we end up 2014 around 11 billion. And the distribution between different sectors, it's just about similar to the employment. 14,000 people of Mondragon Group are working overseas in different countries in the 125 production and development plants we have distributed around the world. You might see when we sell our products, Mondragon is not a commercial brand. Each company which is inside Mondragon is using a brand name to promote their products outside. Those are some examples what you can see in the presentation. As I mentioned before, we are a very diversified group with 118 different cooperatives. 85 of them, the majority, are industrial. The credit, the bank, consumer, 4 agricultural cooperatives, 8 education, and 14 research and development centers. We have companies which has cooperatives which has 30 members and a turnover of 4 to 5 million euros, and we have companies like retailing business which has 25,000 people with turnover of around 6 billion euros. So in all that range, we can have middle, small size, big companies which are together cooperating and putting the good practices and the main ideas to create the future together, and this is what we represent as a Mondragon Group. As I mentioned before, it's very important to have a cooperative well managed to be sustainable and competitive in the market. So the basic unit in our group are the cooperatives. What we share in the corporation as a corporate level are basically the business policies and the strategic guidelines. We have at the corporate level more or less around 60 people, no more. That means that we are a very lean corporation and all the responsibilities and competences are very well distributed among the members' companies. So So each company has to be able to sustain a project, and we put together whatever makes us as a group stronger. Those are the four main policies and targets that we follow as a group. We want our cooperatives, our businesses, to have the right dimension, to be in the right markets where they can sell those products. There we call the strategy the internationalization. As I mentioned before, innovation is a basic plan to create new products and new services, and this will bring new companies, and new companies means new employment. In Mondragon, our main policy is to transform the business environment, improving from the corporate level, trying to improve the competitive position of the businesses in the global markets, generating value added employment, and keeping in mind these companies has to be competitive. They must compete with the rest of the business models which are in the market. For that, they must have the right size, they must accomplish the, in some cases, the global market, and they need clearly to consider strategic alliances, not only with cooperatives, also with different partners which share the same long-term value. We also work with the cooperatives which has not that chance and not a very good position to grow or to develop markets around them. Then the group helps those companies to realign the businesses, to relocate the members, to move from companies to companies. And we finally, as a group, we try to develop integral cooperative projects, which means if there are companies which are adding the different service or products can be a bigger added value for the market, we try and encourage those companies to make bigger size companies, to merge each other, and to be able to present a unique single offer in the market. Let's talk a little bit about one single cooperative, how does it work in Mondragon, coming more to, into the practical life of a company. What are the basic membership commitments? When a person comes into a cooperative, it normally starts as an employee, and after 2 years training, then this person can be, if the job can be sustained in the future, this person can apply to be a member of the cooperative. He normally pays nowadays about 15,000 euros to buy the shares of the membership, and after that day he has the same rights as a person who has been there the last 20 years. One person, one vote. He can participate in the cooperative management bodies, in the government bodies, and this is how it becomes a member of the company. If a company belongs, is a cooperative, we have the commitment from the profits of the company after taxes. We need to dedicate 10% of the profits into the funds of education and cooperative promotion by law. 45% of the company normally goes to reinforce the capital and the reserves of the company, and the rest can be distributed among the shareholders, among the members of the company, as well as the employees. We keep more or less similar rules for the members and also the employees, given the condition that that company has the right financial ratios which ensures the sustainability of the business. In Mondragon, we have the commitment that the employment has to be distributed. As you have seen, the 100 18 companies are in a very different sectors, so normally not all the sectors are suffering problems or crisis at the same time. So we are able to relocate people which is in a company with problems to other companies which are doing better, and in that sense we keep the employment, we help the people and the companies to restructure and go ahead and make more sustainable projects. You have seen that we have several areas. We have industrial divisions. In each division, we have the commitment that between the 15% and the 14% of the profit has to be shared among the companies of that division. And 10% of our net profit goes up into the corporation, what we call the inter-corporation funds. And what do we do with that inter-corporation funds? What are the tools that we have nowadays? 10% of our profits are managed by the Mondragon Group in two different tools. We have the foundation, what we call Mondragon Foundation. Basically, that money is used to help the university training centers, innovation centers. We use that money also to create and help new startups, to distribute to non-profit organizations with humanitarian goals, and we also use that money to support the companies which are in losses with a limit of 2 to 3 years, given certain conditions that the members inside are doing the right approach in order to restructure and come back to profitable situation. The other part of the profits is managed by what we call Mondragon Investment Fund, and this is a private equity fund owned by all the companies, all the cooperatives of Mondragon, which works more in the improvement of the balance and goes into the capital of the cooperatives in order to grow outside international expansion or to have a stronger or M&A process when they want to acquire different companies and become in a bigger size. Then is when Mondragon goes as a minority partner helping to that company temporarily for 5 to 10 years in order to create the product, and then goes out again to help other different companies. So based on the experience which I was showing and sharing with you, we are committed to the future. We are heavily investing in innovation, more or less 8.5% of our added value is reinvested in R&D in all the companies. And since the nature of our products and services has to compete globally, we are fully committed with our companies to create global companies which can serve all the customers in all the markets where they require it. So as a conclusion, I hope this presentation can inspire you for your future developments. Maybe I was hearing from today's deliberations and discussions, and we also face a lot of challenges in the future. We need to reinvent our cooperativism model in order to compete globally. We probably need to partner different kind of companies and different kind of structures in order to be able to compete sustainably. We discuss internally a lot of things. We are the first generation after the founders of the management now, and we have the main challenge is to remember ourselves the original values which has brought up into this conglomerate, as I explained to you before. So we have been also facing the last years during the crisis, we have closed several companies, several cooperatives were not able to survive because the product was not accepted in the market. So in those critical moments, we ask ourselves what to do, either this solution or the other solution. And we always come back to the original founder words, which was, don't pay much attention to what I would do in those cases, just only look how I would do. And his message was, whatever you do, do it through cooperation. And the only recommendation I can give you is have tons of cooperations in your tables and you will be successful in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Oscar Kotsia, for such thought-provoking presentation. I hope honorable members, colleagues, stakeholders, they are able to engage in this presentation in terms of the clarity and the understanding of all the achievements that the Mondragon International has achieved. And would like at this point in time to open up the floor to engage on the presentation that you've just seen right now. And then soon after that, once we're done with that, then we can move over to the next item on the agenda. At this point in time, I will not allocate any specific time. I will judge in terms of questions that we're getting, because I do assume or see that we might get quite a lot, and I will not restrict. So let's get on with it. It's over to the House with the questions. I've got you, sir, right at the back, and can I also have another hand? Nkosi, Carl, I've got three questions. Honorable Charles, I've got four. Honorable Whip, I've got five. Can I take these five, and then I'll take another round of four questions after that? Sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, what we'll do the approach we're going to use differently, we're going to take a question, take a response, and then we move over like that. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. My name is Tan Ngwenya from the National Development Agency. Mine might be a little bit different in terms of what is expected of all of us to follow suit, but I want to know from a political perspective, Mondragon operates and started its operations within the setup of Basque country. And you have a political issue with Basque separatists and the government. How have you managed to balance this road that you've traveled to where you are now, given the space in which your own development had started with within the Basque country? Thank you.
Mondragon is a corporation which has, as I mentioned, 74,000 people. At the beginning it started at a very limited number of persons, but one very clear thing has been we have no political color, no political relations, which might be in the middle of our discussions. Each person, each member can have his ideology, his political ideas, his religion, but that doesn't come into the cooperative policies. So we are very good friends of any different political parties, we are very good friends of any religions, any different people. The Spanish and the Basque relation at that moment was a little bit difficult, but the only, I would say, the Basque was at that time was creating a lot of different models of entrepreneurship. People wanted to overcome certain situation, and one source was creating cooperatives, but we have a lot of family-owned companies, very proactive, which wanted to create employment or create different products, and they were also very well accepted. So I think this solidarity, some of the values are linked to the way that the Basque culture and the people is, but some of them are universal. We can find people who has the same values all over the world.
Thank you, sir. We'll then hand over to Ms. Ngosi.
Thank you. My name is Harriet Ngosi from Uko Zilwetu Secondary Cooperative. Our offerings are managing primary cooperatives, what we call primary cooperatives in South Africa, in terms of ensuring that they have proper compliance, proper systems in place across to accessing markets. So hearing your presentation, I sense that you call a cooperative, so one person goes and undergoes a two-year training program before you can actually accept the person to be a cooperative. So I just need to understand, when you say a cooperative, do you mean one person? Just want to, I'm trying to see the difference between our model and your model. So that is the first question that I have. And the second question that I have is, so you said one question, Rafa, or can I pose two questions?
Maybe I answer that one first. So the cooperatives, the minimum size by law now to create a cooperative in the Basque area is 3 persons. With 3 persons you can create a cooperative. What I was mentioning is most of the cooperatives within Mondragon were created between 59 and the 80s. That was the time that were created most of the companies that you see there. The smallest size company we have within Mondragon nowadays might have 30 members, and we go up to 200, 300, 800, up to 4,000. Okay. So in any of those companies, when a new person comes to work with one of those companies, those cooperatives, normally there is a training period. In this training period, the person has to understand not only the professional development that he or she has to develop, also the way that the company is managed, the members which are around, so they must come along together that ensure that this person will be a member which in the future will be successfully inside the company. From the other side, the company has to be sure that before accepting a new member, this company is able to sustain and keep the job for this person for a long period. So that is the time that varies from company to company, but it goes from 1 year to 2 years, depending on the situation. And after that, the governing body, which is the board, is the one who accepts that member as a new member or not. And it's presented by the management, which previously makes the statement, this job can be sustained in the future, yes or no, then the person is fulfilling the profile to be a member and he is accepted. The next day he is a member with the same rights as the person who has been 23 years in the company.
Thank you, sir.
Director. It actually linked up to my second question, so thank you.
Okay, thank you. Carl?
Thank you. I want to know, does Mondragon and its member organizations or businesses pay tax? And how is that tax collected?
We pay taxes same as any other company, capital-owned company, and in the same
in Spanish, any Spanish community, all the taxes are collected by the government. In the Basque Country, we have a regional government which collects the taxes, so we pay the same depending on the profits. The only thing we have, if the cooperative is keeping certain ratios of number of members versus employees and dedicates a certain money and is successful creating employment, then we have some tax deductions which are benefiting the money that you need to employ for the taxes. The only thing I would say is that if you compare globally what a private owned company pays and a cooperative pays, at the end the effect of the profit is more or less the same, because what we do not dedicate to taxes has to be dedicated to promotion of education and social work, which is 10% by law.
Mm.
So the deductions we get for being a cooperative, if you add the other 10%, you might end up being quite similar to any other business models which is operating in the country.
Thank you. The second question is, the idea of cooperative and the idea of competition, where competition is either defined as rivalry or striving, how do you settle a corporate environment that works so well when there is both competition and cooperation? Has that got something to do with the basic value systems that you instill into members at training level?
I think probably I don't know the answer, but the reality is that in such a model it works, because we have this conglomerate after 50 years, which has had it very based in the values, in an environment where there was a huge growth in Spain, economic growth at that time, and any product which was built was accepted by the market. Nowadays, the situation is completely different. Now, in order to be your products accepted by the market, you must be competitive and you must compete with other companies, not only in Spain, worldwide. That means this is the market rules, this is the environment, and we cannot change it. But what we can do is we can adapt our companies without losing any drop of the basic values. We adapt our structures to compete in that field. And this is probably the best way, and this is probably what makes us successful, adapting ourselves through dialogue, innovation, cooperation, going back to the values again and remembering every day, and that's the only way that we have to face the new challenges.
Thank you. Last question.
Can we just give other members an opportunity to ask, and then if we have time, then I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Please.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you very much, Program Director. My question is, in Mondragon, how is training executed? From what level of schooling? So that the values, these very rich values, are able to spread within the young people, as well as when they start to become workers and to produce, you know, a professionals.
To be very honest, there is no education on values in the school or the university. What has happened until now? The founders of all the cooperatives either are our parents or our uncles. So we have been living in our environment a lot of transmission of the values, not in the school, in our
normal lives. So we have been living with solidarity, not only in the school or in the companies, also in the society. This is part of the area where we live, where the equality and the distribution of the wealth is a value by itself. So one of the problems we are facing now, that the people, we are more and more going into the individualism. So the values are changing. We do have a training center at the Mondragon level, in which we, for the people which is employed in the companies and all the management, we have regular seminars to update the training. But exactly as you asked, we think that we should start now earlier, and we should involve ourselves as Mondragon, not only in our schools and universities, in the general training institutions which we have in our country, trying to start from the very beginning with this kind of values. We have a very good environment, because as I was a student in my school, the teacher was in the front, we were all sitting in that side, learning, not talking to each other, and the education has changed, fortunately. Now the people are more educated in working groups, so this is the right environment to start talking about influencing in our lives from the very beginning. So, as a summary, I would say it is a main concern, since the original founders, some of them already passed away, it will not be easy to transmit verbally most of the values. We need to make a double effort in the education from the very beginning. We are very conscious about that.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Chuck.
Thank you very much. I have two questions. The first question is, what is the gap between the highest paid and the lowest paid employees in your corporation, and how does that differ from the norm in Spain? And secondly, what is the reason why the Mondragon model has not been more broadly adopted by other communities in Spain?
Thank you, Honorable.
Answering to the first question, maybe I will compare the maximum difference. When the group started, was the lowest paid salary to the highest paid salary was 1, 2, 3. That was the difference. And nowadays, it might be in small-sized companies might be 1, 2, 4. 1 to 5, and if you take the complete corporation, between 1 and 7. That's the maximum difference we have. How is it compared to the environment? A person which is working in the manufacturing plant, if he's working in a private owned company compared to a cooperative, the person which is in the cooperative might be earning about 10% more than the outside market, including all the benefits within the cooperative. And the person which is in the management level might be getting around 30% less than what it's getting in the same position in the private owned companies. So that is mandatory within the group, that the highest levels have a solidarity, higher solidarity compared to the rest of the members. And the second question, you might remind me a little bit, sorry.
Yes, why has the Mondragon model not been more broadly adopted in Spain?
Okay. I think it has to do with the DNA of the culture, of the Basque roots. It has to do with the, let's say, the distribution of the GDP. We are located in an area where industrial contribution to the GDP is over 20%. So this kind of model, together with the environment that we have, with research centers, with the government aligned to create innovation and equality in the society, has made Mondragon to be so successful, I would say. The legislation itself has been changed to accommodate this kind of cooperatives to be ruled, and this legislation in other areas in Spain hasn't been developed so far. We opened a couple of subsidiaries 600 kilometers far from our place, and we feel that this model was also accepted very well in crisis moments where people was committed to enter in the cooperatives and were not so well accepted when the economic movement wave is going very well. So probably it has to do with the people itself, the values of the people. We didn't work actively in expanding our model. We are open to share our experiences. But this is a decision to be a cooperative person. Unfortunately, it's not something that you can decide from day one to the next one. You cannot take a pill and say, I am a cooperativist or not. So this has to be a right environment where you can see your partner, where you can take the same risk together, you can share your profits, and this is something that has to be progressively done. When the founder, the priest, came into Mondragon, he spent 15 years before the first cooperative was settled down. That means that there's a long process of adapting, trusting each other, or finding the right idea, and we must admit we have also gone through cooperatives which were not working well, and they are closed now. This is not an ideal environment. This is real life. This is real people working for a real project. Same as in any other business, if we are 100 members in the cooperative, we find always 15 persons which are working hard, pushing very strongly into the right direction of the company. And we also find that 10%, which is always against any decision of the company. So between those two extremes, we have the majority of the people, and the difference of these people that is a very well-informed, we are very transparent companies, and the people has a lot of common sense. And they know when someone of the management is doing a proposal, they make the decision which way to follow. So we create companies which has very intelligent people inside because they are very well informed, we trust each other, and this is the transforming process is the transparency of the information that we get during all the process. All the companies within Mondragon, we do a long-term strategic business plan, which is about 5 years, every 5 years. Then we do a yearly business plan, and then monthly there is a report from the top management to the governing board, which is distributed to all the members. And all decisions to accept the business plan are taken once a year in a general assembly, and before that general assembly you need to convince, discuss with a lot of people to get accepted the new ideas. So I would say we are not a miracle, we are a normal business process, human beings, and the difference is how we approach the proposals, and we need to talk to more people, but once we make the decision, the most majority is behind us, and that makes our projects more successful.
Thank you, Mr. Oscar. Can I allow another one or two questions? And after that, I would like to close this part of the discussion. I will take you, sir, and I will allow Madam Chair. I would love to allow you at the, yeah, at the closing.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for that informing and enlightening presentation. I've got two questions. The first question is that in the early years of the formation of Mondragon, in South Africa, we are 20 years into a new democracy, the cooperative movement is still sort of in its infancy. There are not a lot of success stories yet, you know, at your level. So what were the main focal industries? Because you spoke of the four areas that you are specializing in. What were the first ones that you focused on and prioritized on starting at time? And then the second question, do you want to answer or ask both one time?
Yes. The whole activity started with the industrial manufacturing activity, which was cooking devices. From these cooking devices, since it was required to have castings, then develop foundry cooperatives. It was a metal sheet working, started some stamping facilities. From that one, the household appliances started to have some electronics, so it was developed electronics. So it was mostly manufacturing basic, and it was not given by the Mondragon Group any direction in which sector should we work. So that was more a natural value chain spin-offs starting of the company. The only guidance made by the group was the financial institutions and the social insurance institutions. Those are the ones which were really new ones. Since the regulations of the banking industry in Spain doesn't allow a bank to have up to a certain level of risk with certain customers, then the bank was also developing their own strategy to reduce the risk within the cooperative group, and now it's a bank which is operating for the consumer credits publicly.
Thank you. And then the second question, in our workshop here we are discussing access to funding for the cooperatives mainly and the small businesses. In your early formation years, how did you mitigate that challenge to access funds for your cooperatives in the early formation years leading to the time when you started succeeding? And what is it that then allowed the cooperatives to have ease of access to the funding and finance to make them successful? Thank you.
I think there are different phases in the financing process. When Mondragon decided and the founder decided to create a bank, I think that was the real success story to keep the companies growing. It was not only growing financing, but was also a lot of management support. The bank was taking the money which was public, people, workers, and everybody was putting their resources there, and the companies itself were putting money to create that bank. This is probably the only bank which is owned by companies. Normally it's other way around. So 51% of the Mondragon Laboral Kutxa is belonging to the cooperatives, and 49% belongs to the persons which are working in the bank. So that was probably the best thing that helped at the early stage the access to financing. Financing was teaching in how to manage the company, business plans, how to measure the risks. That was along 20 years a key tool for Mondragon. Now all the companies are going to the markets with their own projects, and most of the projects are financed by commercial banks.
And this is a weakness that we feel as companies, because we cannot enter in our shareholder group private owners because of our rules. And this is probably something that has to be addressed for the near future, because companies which has to compete with the, let's say, with the automakers or the auto suppliers and want to grow, either has the right platforms to access to partners and capital partners, or with all the money we have in all the people around Mondragon, won't be able to finance the growth which is required in that market. So we are facing the same challenges as any other company, with the weakness that our capital is variable, is in the company with employees, and we need to accept that case. We are doing very proactive conversations with financial institutions at the European level, like the European Investment Bank, to increase the reputation of the cooperatives as a well-managed companies and minimize the image of risky companies. And this is in which we are working very closely, and we feel that the European institutions are very keen on establishing the right kind of platforms to support also those cooperatives in a normal market condition.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Chair.
Thank you. My question is going to come in a form of an experiment in South Africa. We have right there at the bank, a group called the King of Midlands. They are members. They are taxi owners. Okay. And they then organized themselves to establish a cooperative. In the beginning, they wanted to buy, to cut the middlemen in terms of supplying them with the cars that they needed as taxi owners. They felt that the interest was very high, and as a result, they contributed 1,000 rands each per week to then buy each member a car. And they also set their own rules that the members will not have more than this number of cars. That led them to a situation where all the members had the cars, and even if one member wasn't able to generate enough income to pay, they found a way of ensuring that the car is not repossessed. But after that, they felt that they can make their income, the income that they are earning, rotate amongst themselves, remain within, if they were to set up under other enterprises. And the first enterprise that they wanted to set up was a fuel filling station, which they did not acquire because of the funding processes, which were delayed until the person who was selling the filling station sold the filling station. But they continued to persevere and establish their own financial institute to give loans to themselves. But in that process, they are also looking at establishing their own tire fitment center, as well as their own spare shop. In comparing that, what would you say were the similarities of that group to what happened in Mondragon, and what do you see as missing instruments that actually helped Mondragon to grow?
I see a lot of similarities between the way that you describe. They organize themselves to cover the needs what they have at an early stage, and from that you're trying to make in the whole value that you are using to provide the service, you're trying to have a cooperative way to do it and maximize the synergies that individually cannot be taken. I think the next steps has to be, in my opinion, not only work looking inside, but trying to any of those services that you provide for yourselves, being able to provide for the outside customers, because this is bringing always a sense of competition which encourages the people to improve the services, and this is market driven push. From the other side, whatever you can do internally to work not only as a short term but also as a long term, in my opinion, is the one which is going to give you more sustainability in the future. For Mondragon, one single company was always strong, but the strongest model is when you add small or big companies working together. This network, you need to decide in each of the different groups, fuel, spares, services, whatever you have there, insurances, you need to allocate some resources together to decide what you want to be in the future. So you need to start allocating common resources, managing professionally for the long term, and this will be probably the embryo of a future. You need to do like this to get the right dimension. Once you get a better dimension, bigger dimension, you will be filling the gaps that you have. Linked with an innovation center in services, in management, please be linked with an education institution and have a very close contact with the government and institutions so they can understand what are your needs and you can influence in the legislation in order to allow the future requirements to be addressed in a cooperative way. This would be my recommendations.
Thank you very much. Okay, Madam Chair, just one last one,
okay.
Then we can...
The follow-up, we are getting into a case study here. The reason that group could not acquire a filling station was the red tape from DTI. It was the red tape from DTI because they were visited again and again and again and again, not looking at the fact that they had managed without DTI to buy cars for themselves. That was not seen as a strength for the group by DTI. They were evaluated in the same way that the commercial bank does. You are a risk, cannot be funded, Blackman, you are on your own. This is a DFI. You don't have to shake your head, because this is the group that I've been working very closely with for many, many years. They were visited, they were evaluated, nothing came through. Here we are saying we are providing this session to be a mirror of what we do and how the response from the presenter is saying influence the government to change the manner in which they are providing services. That is the answer. And by shaking your head, you are saying you will remain in the way you have been doing things and not accommodate to be influenced by the group that require services. So, if you are not saying that, I don't understand why you are shaking your head then, when I am illustrating. Maybe just yes, because your body language is saying to me, that's not true. Okay. Okay. Here we are making a mirror. We are talking about a real situation, and we want to find solutions of how we change the manner in which we do things. That group no longer belongs to BPI in terms of services. It belongs to small business. And small business is here and listening. So far, the funding institution that is supposed to be helping that group to acquire is here. And we are bringing in an expert in corporate who has not been here when we were making presentations, but he is responding in a manner that can assist us to reshape the manner in which we provide funding. Now, the question is two. Representatives of the department, including SUFA, as to, do you see a gap in your funding instruments from what is being shared with us by the Mondragon and what that group actually wants as services from you? Do you see any gaps in your funding model?
My bone in my body, every bone in my body tells me not to take your anger and take it when you come back from lunch, recharge, refuel, and then we can properly engage, because soon after we come back from lunch, we will engage in deliberations, because I foresee it's going to be an interesting one today. We've got quite a few issues that we left from yesterday that we need to discuss them today. But on that note, I would like to hand over to Madam Chair. I've been informed by my colleagues that the presentation that we would like to do. Yeah.
Thank you. There is a presentation that we'd love to do, but also we would like to take a group photo. Okay. This is just a small token. It's a pen, but it is made by a groups. As you can see, it is in a wood. It illustrates that yes, South Africa is at work. And also this is from a craft making cooperative. And it is an indication that you have been to South Africa and we are keen to learn from the Mondragon.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
We have the same for the Consulate General.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
We really thank you, the Spanish Embassy, for organizing, for responding to our request and organizing that we do get a representative from Mondragon. And a very key person, because he's the chairperson of the international wing of the Mondragon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We have Sylvia, who's who represented the Spanish Chamber, and we think that there will be collaboration moving forward, and she will be a key person for us to interact with. Thank you very much for the work that you have done for us.
we can then the officials here will guide us as to how we will take a group photo.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I'm quite happy to see that we are multi-skilled. We've got photojournalists. We're doubling up. I sense that some of our members would like to engage with the Mondragon representatives. So through you, Chair, they're saying. Oh, okay. No, Chair, Honourable Chair has informed me that they will speak for the length of the presentation today. I would actually also encourage that let's take this opportunity during lunch. Let's engage, let's learn, let's hear their shortfalls, where they failed, and let's hear where they've succeeded, and maybe we can learn a thing or two, and we can take those learnings and see how to meet best tailor them to the situations in our country. On that note, I would like to take this opportunity to also inform members that I would like to bump up lunch before deliberations. Let's go out for lunch and also come back exactly at 13:45. Not 13:46, not 13:45, 30 seconds, 13:45. And then let's come back and be settled, and then let's start those hard discussions, that robust, hard discussions that you need to have, and in coming up with workable solutions. Honourable members, we can have lunch at still at the same place. You go out on your right. I see a hand right at the back. A quick photo. I will take instruction from the Secretariat. Do you have a photographer right now that can take a photo? With the phone? Okay, cool. Where are we going to stand? Okay, cool. The Secretariat has just informed me that they will actually request me to, they will request us to take a quick photo before we leave. Madam Chair will be standing in front with our delegates from Mondragon, and then the honourable members also.
I will request that we take a group photo with the members of the portfolio committee.
Yes.
All of us.
Yes.
Not just the chairman.
Not just the chairman. Yeah. The members.
Okay. Hey, yeah, next quarter is a general.
So I'm just saying.